Laurel Duggan. She's a social and culture reporter at the Daily Caller, and she joins us now. Laurel, good afternoon to you.
Vince, thanks for having me on.
Tell me about this study and what does it purport to have found?
So the study, it was released Wednesday, and it claims to find that transgenderism is not becoming more common and that males are identifying as transgender at a higher rate than females among youth populations. And researchers said that the data they used contradicted the idea that transgenderism is a social contagion, and particularly a social contagion that has an outsized impact on adolescent girls.
So
to really understand this, researchers have been examining patients with gender dysphoria, you know, the deep sense of discomfort with one's biological sex that sometimes drives people to become transgender. They've been looking into this for a long time, and clinical practices have been treating it for decades. Up until about 10 years ago, the patients were almost exclusively male. They generally were either prepubescent boys who had experienced dysphoria consistently since they were very young children, or they were middle-aged men. That was basically the demographic with almost no exceptions. Suddenly, about 10 years ago, there was a huge surge in females identifying as transgender very suddenly in their adolescence, oftentimes related to, you know, discomfort with their bodies during or after puberty. Many psychiatrists said this looks an awful lot like a social contagion, given that these patients are totally different from anyone we've seen in the past, and it's all springing up at once, especially given how much of this comes from or appears to be coming from social media.
Okay, so so the study that we're talking about, the one that came out this past week, it suggests that that identifying as transgender, that it has strictly or about as close to strictly as you can get a biological cause rather than a social one?
They didn't say what the true cause is. They didn't say that it was biological, but they said, hey, based on our findings, it's not a social contagion, which, I mean, it's ridiculous to say that teenagers don't influence each other. And further, the researchers were relying on data solely from 2017 and 2019, when the transgender social contagion was well underway and had been for probably a decade.
Right. So if you weren't looking at data from prior to the surge in transgender identification by women, you have nothing decent to compare it to. You're literally surveying the current moment.
Right. I mean, and in defense of the researchers, they were using CDC data and they didn't start collecting it until 2017. But if they had looked at a more robust data set, such as, I don't know, the largest pediatric gender clinic in the world, Tavistock in the United Kingdom, they saw a 5,000% surge in referrals from adolescent females just over the past decade alone.
You know, we've talked about this before, this idea that a bunch of women, young girls, will begin identifying as transgender, sometimes all together in friend groups, or many of them who know each other will simultaneously identify as males rather than the women that they are, the girls that they are. Have we seen any sort of correlation in terms of the other types of social contagions that have befallen young girls in the past? You know, we think of self-harm, right, as something that girls for many years have engaged in, and we try and stop things like cutting and suicidal ideation. Are there relationships between those things and this transgender identification?
Well, several of the psychiatrists that I've talked to have said, yes, this looks an awful lot like what I was dealing with, I don't know, 15 years ago with eating disorders or speech tics and stutters that girls are picking up either from their friends or from social media. Of course, that's not to say it shouldn't be taken seriously, but, you know, that it's absurd to say that young people don't influence each other.
Right. By the way, I want to pause on that point. There have been in the past, girls have literally picked up speech impediments because they're trying to fit in. They'll adopt a speech impediment that wasn't natural.
Yes. Even perhaps not intentionally, just seeing a lot of it on TikTok. I don't know, something goes on in your head, maybe in the same way that you pick up accents.
Sure.
But the researchers here, they're telling you to ignore what you see with your own eyes, which is, like you said, entire friend groups suddenly identifying as transgender, half of a classroom suddenly identifying as transgender, when in reality, we know that the transgender population has always been less than 1% of the U.S. population. But even beyond that, this was a very, very flawed study. Most importantly, its key conclusion was that females were outnumbered by males in transgender youth populations. That was based off of the CDC simply asking respondents, what is your sex? not what was your sex at birth or what is your biological sex. So researchers assumed that respondents were giving their birth sex when asked that question. But obviously, if you ask a transgender person what their sex is, oftentimes they're going to tell you their gender identity because, of course, they're not comfortable with their actual biological sex.
Well, sure. So that arrangement suggests that it's actually a majority women, biological women or biological girls who are responding.
Well, no, because they have respondents from both sexes. It's just that their conclusions are the opposite of what the truth is based off of their own study, because they assume the biological males were females and vice versa. So it would explain why the transgender males, who they assumed were male at birth, were actually a good bit shorter than the females in the study.
Okay. I think we're saying the same thing. But boy, when we get into this conversation, it becomes very confusing when you're talking about biological versus identifying as. Laurel, obviously you just laid out one of the gaping holes in this study. What are the other problems with this study? What might, and to what extent has the media picked it up as authoritative?
Well, I mean, those are the main ones. Their entire conclusion is based on nothing. Other people have pointed this out as well. But there are also, as we said, it doesn't account for what we see with our own eyes out in society. The study also assumes that because transgender children are more likely to report being bullied, well, then, of course, transgenderism can't be a social contagion because it's not socially desirable. But, of course, that conclusion would apply to all of the other social contagion things that we were discussing earlier. But yeah, of course, it was picked up by a bunch of media outlets who all uncritically parroted the researchers' conclusions and said that it disproved the social contagion theory and that it should influence doctors to not have hesitation because of possible social contagion in administering sex changes to minors.
Who paid for and/or conducted this study?
The researchers are all funded through different, through like their jobs at universities and everything. But I know that Jack Turbin, who is the lead author on this, there's no one who's cited more in this field than him. He in the past has received funding from pharmaceutical organizations, I believe Pfizer and Arbor. The Daily Caller has reported on this in the past.
He's received funding from pharmaceutical organizations. And why does that pose a conflict of interest to this conversation?
I would say it poses a conflict of interest because these companies produce some of the drugs that are used in youth transitions and in sex changes generally. At the end of the day, though, obviously pharmaceutical companies have a lot to gain from this financially, but when it comes to the researchers themselves, I really do think that they are just ideologically motivated true believers in this ideology for kids.
Why are they so upset that it could be social causes behind this identification pattern? What would make them so disturbed by that revelation, that reality, that they would engineer a study to suppress it?
It undermines all of their past research, which has, been very, very unhesitantly promoting the administering of sex changes to children, most of which are irreversible. So, the fact that these kids could have grown up and grown out of their transgender identity and been fine with their natural bodies, instead they have been administered drastic lifetime inescapable biomedical interventions. And that's a really hard thing. And as these kids grow up, I think some of this blowback surely will be directed at these researchers who were doing terrible research and endangering children.
Laurel Duggan, who's a social issues and culture reporter for the Daily Caller, what about the American Academy of Pediatrics? And we've seen some reports in the past that there have been debates among the nation's pediatricians about how much to study the issue of transgenderism and medical interventions and surgeries and chemicals. What do we know about the American Academy of Pediatrics?
Well, I know that they also receive funding from Pfizer and Arbor and possibly some other pharmaceutical companies. Just off the top of my head, I can name those two.
Sure.
They play a role in distributing grants to researchers. They've obviously funded Jack Turbin, who was behind the study. I truly could not tell you why these organizations, these medical organizations, are so gung-ho in favor of child sex changes and biomedical interventions for gender dysphoria. I don't know, maybe that's just an innate bias within the field, but it is not the case that there's a universal medical consensus. Many doctors, some of whom I've talked to, have questions about this and are very worried about children's safety, and plenty of others are silenced because they're afraid of public or professional repercussions for coming out against this.
You know, one of the phenomenons that I've noticed that the left has undertaken over these past few years is a shift from what they used to refer to as the body positivity movement, that people should be happy in the bodies that they are in. They shouldn't be judged for that, and they should be allowed to, you know, live their lives and not have somebody tell them that they're a mistake. The left now has taken an active position that that for some people, their bodies are mistakes, that they need to be changed. They need to be altered. They need to be put under the knife. They need to be injected with chemicals. Are you surprised by this shift by the left?
I honestly am. I mean, I am seeing the extent to which some of these politicians are just beholden to the most extreme transgender activists on this issue. A lot of it is, you know, you have to sift through a lot of research to really see the lies that are being spread about this. And, you know, you're being told constantly kids will commit suicide if they don't get these treatments. You have to support it. That's a hard thing to come back against unless you actually have a lot of data to support your case. And not everyone can spend all day reading these studies and seeing how bad, how unscientific they are.
Yeah. I just think a basic principle is if you're going to help a kid, you don't accelerate their decline. You don't abandon them. You actually help them. And what we have here is a really contorted and dangerous use of language. Things like gender affirming care, which is a euphemism for inalterably destroying a child and their future. I mean, a lot of these chemicals, Laurel, and the surgical interventions for sure, will end up sterilizing the children who undergo them. No.
Yes. So first, you know, if you're starting this from a young age, you go on puberty blockers, which some doctors claim are reversible, but they're really not, because in almost every case you go on to cross-sex hormones, which can sterilize you. And then, of course, there are genital surgeries later down the line if you choose to undergo those. So it is extreme. It's pushing very young and, you know, troubled people to believe that there is something fundamentally wrong with their body. It pushes gender stereotypes. It tells young girls that they can't do things that are traditionally masculine, can't be tomboys, you know, whatever. It's very harmful.
It's disgraceful. Laurel Duggan, thank you for looking into this and bringing some clarity to, once again, an issue that the rest of the media is only making more opaque. Thank you, Laurel. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.